Welcome to the Molding Health Show. Our goal is to leverage the wisdom and experience of healthcare practitioners to set you on a path of self-discovery and healing. These insights, coupled with a multidisciplinary approach to each area of interest, should provide an invaluable resource to everyone looking for a better approach to health. In this episode, we speak to Liesel McDooling, a speech therapist based in Bethlehem, South Africa, about dyspraxia.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Molding Health Show. Today, we're going to be chatting about dyspraxia with Liesel McDooling, a speech therapist based in the Bethlehem area. And she's just going to be giving us a little bit more information about what dyspraxia is and how it can be treated by seeing a speech therapist. Liesel, welcome to the show.
Thank you. And thank you very much for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you back on the show. You know, a couple of days ago, we chatted about speech therapy, so it's nice to get into the next field of it. Today, we're chatting about dyspraxia. Could you just let our audience know a little bit more about what dyspraxia is?
Yes. So in speech therapy terms, we also call it apraxia, but it's basically the same thing. And that is a planning problem. So your brain needs to make plans to tell your speech muscles, so that is the tongue and the jaw and the lips, how to move to make different speech sounds and then also to make the word. So there's a problem with that planning area.
Okay. So, you know, with that, you're saying there's a problem with that planning area. Is it that there's actually a cause for dyspraxia? You know what could cause it? Or is it just something that some people have and other people don't?
Yeah, so basically there's still being research done about the cause of it. Sometimes it's genetic. Sometimes it can happen after, you know, a traumatic event to the brain, but sometimes it just happens as well. So the causes are still, you know, they're still doing research on that.
Okay, so it's still very new in the research as to what could cause it, but and are you seeing more cases of dyspraxia in children these days, or is it more all across the board?
Definitely more dyspraxia cases. In 1 week, I think I saw 3 children for evaluations, and I suspect all of them has apraxia. So I'm definitely seeing more of it in private practice.
All right. And because you treat children, would dyspraxia or apraxia be considered as a learning disability for, much like dyslexia, or is it considered completely separately?
So it's not classified as a learning disability, but it coexists with other learning disabilities like dyslexia, as you mentioned.
Okay, so, you know, it's still very new. A lot of people are still trying to work out what causes it and that kind of stuff. You think a person could grow out of dyspraxia, or is it more that they start to learn how to work with it so that it no longer causes the planning issues?
Yes, so they won't necessarily grow out of it. I think it also depends on the severity of the dyspraxia. So I think it's like you said, I think you just teach them techniques and they learn how to, you know, live with it and live life to the best of their abilities with the techniques that we teach them.
All right. Yeah, that definitely makes sense because, you know, I'm dyslexic. So there's one thing that I definitely realized is that you don't cure dyslexia, but you do start to learn how to look at things differently. So I'll never forget, I went to school in Zim and you had to get a pen license in order to move from writing in pencil to pen. And because I was dyslexic, but the spelling was horrible. So, you know, you were scratching stuff out. And it wasn't until I'd sort of started with my occupational therapist to learn the methodologies that my handwriting improved to a point where it didn't look like a doctor scribbling a script. And I was the last kid in my class to get my pen license. But I don't have the neatest handwriting now, but I can definitely read a lot better than I did back then. And that was just learning to use those methods. So with dyspraxia, it would be the same thing. It would be learning to use the methods that, you know, your speech therapist is working with you on. And eventually, you know, it's not as debilitating as it was in your younger years.
Definitely, yes.
Okay. As a parent, you know, what sort of signs would one be on the lookout for to know if their child might have dyspraxia?
So, you know, some of the signs is very the same as other speech disorders, like if it's still a young child, there might be delayed onset of words and talking. But as I said, that can be any other speech disorder as well. So there's very specific signs that you can look out for. So the first one is difficulty imitating words. So the word will just come out, you know, not the correct way. Also, when they try to say the word, it will be very inconsistent. So it will be sort of a different word that comes out every time. And then also, you will also see some groping movements, you know, of the jaw and the tongue when they try to say different sounds and words.
Okay, so from a speech side, you as a parent, you would start picking up certain things. It might tie into maybe there is a delay in speech, but, you know, also just be on the lookout. And as you said, you've said previously, you know, if you feel in your gut as a parent that there might be something wrong, rather book an appointment and get an assessment, even if it is just to ease your mind and there isn't anything. At least then you've had that, okay, you know, little Timmy's two and the fact that he can't say hippopotamus is normal, but rather see someone and have a look. So with dyspraxia, would you as a speech therapist work with or be part of a multidisciplinary team to help a child, or is dyspraxia solely a speech impediment or a something that only affects speech and movement of the jaw?
No, definitely part of a multidisciplinary team. So sometimes, you know, coordination is also a problem with dyspraxia. So the people that will be part of your multidisciplinary team is, well, first of all, the pediatrician that will make the referrals. Then you also have an occupational therapist, a physiotherapist, and then also the speech language therapist. So usually it's not only one of the or one side that is affected. There's a lot of other things that the other professionals can also treat.
And that would be because, as you said, there's something in the planning center of the patient's brain that's not quite there. So, you know, mm-hmm. where the brain's trying to tell them how to say a word, they're not getting mm-hmm. that. But from an occupational therapy point of view, it might be that they're unable to hold something or mm-hmm. that they're clumsy and those kind of things. So there are mm-hmm. some other signs that parents could look out for. Yes. As parents, you can get a little bit more information on the other aspects of dyspraxia in another one of our chats. We will be chatting to an occupational therapist about how they assist treating children with dyspraxia. So, Liesl, from a speech therapy point of view, you know, what would the treatment process or plan be for a typical dyspraxia or apraxia case with a child? You know, is it a defined length of time, or how would that work?
So we use very specific methods and techniques for a child with apraxia. So you won't use the methods in other sort of speech problems. So it's very, you only use it in dyspraxia or apraxia. It's a specific technique for that type of problem. Unfortunately, we can't say how long it will take. It depends on the age of the child, and also it depends on the severity of the apraxia. But what I usually tell parents is to start with the therapy, and then after each session, we can monitor the progress and see, all right, so the child is progressing nicely, or, you know, we need a few more sessions. But usually, it's not a quick fix. But once again, it depends on how early you would bring your child, the age of the child, and also the severity.
Okay, that's actually really good to know. You know, much like any therapy, there aren't set timelines. Although the treatment is, you know, this is the treatment course, depending on how the child or the patient reacts to the treatments and that kind of, you know, it could take time. So you just need to be patient. But I do agree with you, you know, early intervention definitely would help. From that aspect, are there any additional issues that a child might face the later the dyspraxia is diagnosed? You know, I mean, if you're diagnosing it in a toddler, 2 to 3 years old, would there be a difference in the length of treatment and time as opposed to treating a child who's only diagnosed maybe at 9 or 10?
Yes, definitely. So when you get the client early, then you can start with the techniques early on. And then, you know, you can get a lot of progress in those sessions that the client will attend. So let's say the child came to you when he or she was 3 years old. Then by the time the child is 4, progress would have already been made. Let's say you only get the child at 9, then you know that we didn't intervene in any way already. So then we need to start from the beginning. So definitely it makes a difference. The age that you see the client definitely makes a difference.
That does make sense. So obviously the later you see the child, there is also the possibility that this is going to have been affecting them from potentially a schooling level or a social level as well. And obviously it might take a little bit longer to treat than if you saw them from a younger age where they were able to kind of start already learning those methods and techniques before moving into the scholastic environment.
Yes, and especially when you look at older children like 5 to 7 year olds, then reading and spelling becomes very important. And especially in a 5 year old, a lot of, we call it phonological awareness, so that is just the awareness of different sounds. That becomes very important. Now, let's say the word is giraffe, and the child has to clap that word into syllables, so it's giraffe. But the child can't pronounce the word correctly, so he might say it's a giraffe or whatever, then the amount of syllables won't be the same. And then that affects, you know, the ability to learn how to read and to write as well.
Okay, so, you know, that actually makes complete sense. If I'm not sure how to say the word, it's definitely going to make it a lot harder to be able to read or write the word. So, you know, I'll never forget, I mean, whatever you watch with kids, it always seems so funny when they can't say spaghetti and they say paschetti.
Yes.
But that's
a very good example.
So that would be something along the lines of, you know, they can't quite get the word right. So for them to be able to read or write that word is now also going to be difficult because they can't actually say it.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, so it's not cute and funny when your little one says paschetti. It could be a sign that, you know, they can't form the word correctly, you know, and maybe just have a look at seeing this with a speech therapist to make sure that it isn't anything more serious than, you know, they just can't say spaghetti.
Yes, and also the parents can also look out. If it's one word, then I won't say it's a problem. Mm. But when the child does it with, you know, a lot of other words as well, then definitely yes.
Okay, so with all of that, you know, you mentioned earlier that dyspraxia could also be from a traumatic head injury and that kind of stuff. So that would stand to reason then that adults would also be, could also suffer from something like dyspraxia.
Yes, definitely. So we see it a lot in the patients who suffered strokes, a traumatic brain injury. So that is also something that can happen after that.
All right. So, and then as an adult, you would then see a speech therapist that specializes in rehabilitation or adult speech therapy, because it is different to treating pediatric children.
Yes, it is different.
Is there anything else you would be able to just let our audience know about dyspraxia and maybe the treatment of it?
Yes. So as I said previously, we used very specific techniques. So basically, we are, depending on a technique that we use, we work a lot on the place that different sounds are produced in the mouth and also the manner that they are produced. So it might look different than only help a child with a language problem. So I think what I always like to tell parents is just why I'm doing certain things and the techniques I'm using. So don't be scared to ask your speech therapist, listen, why are you doing this? Why would this help? Because when the parents actually understands the treatment protocol, it just helps the progress much faster, if I can put it like that.
Yeah, no, that actually does make complete sense. You know, if you understand why you're having to do something or why a specific treatment is being done, then it helps you to see where, you know, what the journey is going to be and to be able to. So with anything, you know, always ask your therapist, ask your healthcare professional so that you have a better understanding. Because the better understanding that you have, the easier it is for you to also help your child or your loved one to cope with the treatment methodology that are being put in front of them in order to overcome their dyspraxia or dyspraxia or health issue that they might have. So are there any other disorders that might be linked to or come in association with dyspraxia?
Yeah, so usually, as I mentioned earlier, it coexists with learning disabilities like dyslexia or problems of writing and all of those things. It's not always, but you see it a lot of the times that it coexists with other learning disabilities.
Okay, super. And, you know, you were saying it is fairly, people are not always 100% sure what causes it. Sometimes it's genetic, sometimes it's a brain injury. Have you ever come across a case of maybe dyspraxia being misdiagnosed as ADHD, or does that not happen?
Yes, no, it definitely happens. There's not a lot of, you know, cases that you get and to say, all right, this is 100% dyspraxia. So usually it's quite... I also don't diagnose it after one session, or I'm saying now diagnosing, but more like think that it can be like that. So you usually monitor it over a few sessions to see, all right, now I think this can be it. So it's not usually a one size fits all, if I can put it like that.
Yeah, no, that's actually really cool to hear, because that's the other thing that I think so many people get wrong when it comes to therapy, is it's not one visit and we know what it is. It has to be a couple of visits, a couple of assessments, you know, also because the first time you bring a child into the therapy space might be a little bit uncomfortable, or maybe they had a bad day at school, so they're not going to be as open, which means the therapist might not see everything on one session. It needs to be a few sessions to be able to fully assess, is it A, B, or C? Because the last thing you want is to go, okay, it's A, but you haven't had enough time to have a look at what the child is as a whole. So
definitely. And also with the little ones, you know, it is like you said, they are not themselves the first time. And then after a few sessions, then you can assess the problem in a better way. Yes.
All right. So just from my side, as always, folks, remember anything with therapy, whether it be for yourself or a family member or a loved one, remember that it is always a journey. It doesn't happen overnight. It's not like surgery where they're going in and removing a spleen and the problem solved. There is a journey. Follow your treatment plan from the treating professional. Ask for their advice. Ask as many questions as you feel you need to ask to get the understanding, because at the end of the day, that's what's going to be best for you, your loved one, and your family members. Liesl, is there anything else from your side that you'd like to let our listeners know?
Just once again, like you said, early intervention is key. So when you think something is up, you don't need to be sure what it is. Make an appointment with your speech therapist so that we can have a look and then just tell you what the journey might be.
That's absolutely fabulous. Liesl, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm sure we will chat again in the future on different subjects to do with speech therapy. And if anybody would like to contact Liesl to make an appointment or book an assessment, please, her contact information will be in the end of the show notes. You can also pop to her Facebook page, Liesl McDooling Speech Therapy, and her contact information is there as well. Thank you for joining us today, Liesl.
Thank you so much. It was really nice.
Pleasure, and we'll see you again soon.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening. As always, stay tuned, and we'll speak to you in the next episode.